Down south, they say it's the economy, stupid. Up here, we say it's the economy, eh? And this is Political Economy Radio, a progressive take on economic issues in Canada and beyond. My name is Michał Rozworski, and welcome to the show. Today's focus is on the Temporary Foreign Workers Program. The program has garnered increasing media attention the last couple of weeks, but sadly, much of this attention has ignored the experiences of migrant workers themselves and missed some of the most salient aspects of the program, namely its role in a much larger transformation of the labor market towards greater precarity, a precarity that lowers working conditions for all workers. My two guests, Jason Foster and Adriana Paz Ramirez, will provide some corrective to this coverage, I hope. First up, my interview with Jason. Jason teaches at Athabasca University, and his research has focused on migrant labor and the role of the Temporary Foreign Workers Program in the Canadian labor market. We spoke earlier this week. So, Jason, maybe we could begin with some context. Can you maybe very briefly sketch out the recent history of the use of temporary foreign workers in Canada, and in particular on about how the Temporary Foreign Worker Program has changed from one focused on small numbers of high-skill workers to one that is now more about bringing in low-skill workers as well?
Sure. I mean, most people may not be aware that we've actually had some version of a Temporary Foreign Worker Program since the 1970s. And for the bulk of that history, it was intended to kind of facilitate, you know, what I like to call sort of the high-end international labor pools. You know, so we're talking scientists, musicians, and performers use temporary foreign worker programs when they kind of come to tour, you know, in Canada. They need to get permits, and that usually comes through the temporary foreign worker program. You know, university professors who are coming to visit for a couple of years, those kinds of occupations, which are naturally kind of an international labor pool, and these tend to be very high-skilled workers who can, you know, fend for themselves for the most part. What happened, though, is in 2002, the then Liberal federal government made a key decision. And what they basically did is they opened up the program, which used to be restricted in terms of the types of occupations. It opened it up to basically all occupations. So all levels of skill, all industries, all kinds of types of workers. Suddenly, employers could apply to the program to bring in a temporary foreign worker. That was a fundamental shift in the purpose of the program. And what then over the last 10-12 years we've seen is a rapid expansion of the program. We are seeing numbers that are basically four times higher than what they were in the early 2000s. And we're seeing a dramatic shift in the types of workers that are coming. You know, no longer is this high-skilled, mostly English-speaking country workers. We're now seeing workers from developing nations, from India, from Philippines, from Central America, and so forth, and much more lower-skilled occupations. So we're seeing a lot more use in retail, in hospitality, in food service industries. Those kinds of occupations are what we're now seeing. And as a result, the constant problems that have been arising because of that fundamental shift in the program.
Right. And I think one other trend that that you've noted is not only this increase, but that this increase in the number of temporary foreign workers is not countercyclical. So the number of temporary foreign workers entering Canada did not fall significantly during the recession after the financial crash and has been increasing it since. So it's not just aimed at good economic times when we have shortages. So what does this say about the function of the program?
Well, I think it says two things. I mean, I think and to not put too fine a point on it, I think it was told that Canadians are sold a bill of goods by policymakers and by the federal government and various supportive provincial governments around the purposes of the program. In the mid-90s, we were told unequivocally, this is because of the boom, this is because of the boom, this is because of the boom. It's all temporary. They'll go home as soon as the economy turns down again. Well, we crunched the numbers and we discovered that, lo and behold, the numbers didn't shrink. They kind of leveled off for a year or two, and they've continued to skyrocket again in the last couple of years. And so I think what this says fundamentally is that the role of the Temporary Foreign Worker Program in the labor market has changed dramatically without any kind of public debate. It is now, instead of it being a temporary kind of band-aid measure for select occupations, it has become a permanent aspect of our labor market dynamics. And so basically what we now have is this is a new feature of the Canadian labor market on a permanent basis that we need to factor into our thinking about how does our economy run, how, you know, what are the consequences for the economy because we now have this new permanent feature, and various other questions that flow from that.
Sure. Would you say it's fair then to sort of characterize the temporary foreign workers program now as increasingly sort of something structural, as a form of, you know, maybe you could call it labor market discipline, anything you'd like, but sort of a program that tends to impact not only short-term labor supply, but actually impact, you know, long-term things like the structure of the labor market, the distribution of power between employers and workers?
Well, what I think I can say, because it's hard to guess intentions, but what we can clearly know is, intended or not, the consequences of this kind of large-scale migrant worker program, temporary foreign worker program, and we've seen this experience in Europe, is that they tend to become larger than expected, they last longer than expected, and this is the key piece, they create dependencies in certain sectors and industries. Employers become dependent upon temporary foreign workers in their business model, in their economic model. And the basic reason for that is because it's a way for them to maintain control. It's not just, I mean, it does help them contain wages and working conditions, but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that kind of monetary aspect. It becomes about being able to have a higher degree of control of the nature of your workforce, the nature of your workers. And so you're able to extract greater surplus value from these workers, not just in terms of monetary wage that you pay them, but in terms of they'll work harder, they'll put up with conditions that others may not because they're in this vulnerable position that make it more difficult for them to be able to defend their rights.
Right. And I think we've seen this sort of, you know, almost stated explicitly by some of the people in the business press or the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, where that's exactly the argument that's given. You know, these are the sort of stereotype of the quote-unquote lazy Canadian worker who won't show up for an interview or won't come on the job or, you know, wants to, you know, go to the doctor, whereas the temporary foreign worker is someone who is, as the business press puts it, committed to the job. But I think this is something that comes out, you know, maybe you could speak to this, comes out more from, you know, the nature of their relationship with their employers.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, and I can confirm that with the research that I and my colleagues have done when we talk to employers, is they sort of talk about temporary foreign workers being kind of a quote-unquote ideal employee for them. They're flexible, they're compliant, they don't talk back, they're happy to take the hours. I mean, this dynamic, and I think it's important when we talk about the temporary foreign worker program to not sort of makes the temporary foreign workers themselves these passive victims in the picture, right? I mean, these are men and women who are making active choices for themselves, who are making what you know, we could argue quite strongly are rational choices for themselves. And so part of the dynamic is that they're separated from their families, they're separated from their communities, they're coming in part because they know they can make more money here than they can back home, or they can work in an occupation here where they can't at home. And so they're here to work. And so that plays into their motivations, right? They got nothing else to do, right? If you're sitting in Fort McMurray as a temporary foreign worker and someone offers you an extra shift, well, you might as well take it, right? So that's that. There's a symbiotic kind of dynamic that obviously is built upon a structure of a profound power imbalance, because temporary foreign workers there, and maybe I don't know how many of your listeners are aware of the actual conditions in which temporary foreign workers get their work permits. Like, their work permits stipulate the occupation they're allowed to work in. They stipulate the region, like the place that they're allowed to work in, and it stipulates the employer they are allowed to work for. So what the program does is it actually restricts and eliminates in some aspects the kind of labor mobility rights that most of us take for granted. A temporary foreign worker just can't up and quit and cross the street to the competitor, because that competitor might not have an LMO and they can't get a job for them. And they can't even work for them until they get their work permit changed, which can take months. And so they're in a hyper vulnerable situation, and you combine that with their own personal motivations. And in the temporary foreign workers I've spoken to, most come here mostly because they see this as a stream to permanent residency. And again, the temporary foreign worker program prohibits that for the vast majority of them. So this, we get what we get here, to make a long story short, we get a really complicated employment relationship that is, I think, in the long term, problematic, both for the temporary foreign workers themselves, but also for the broader labor market and how it functions.
All right. We'll have to stop it there. Thanks so much, Jason. It's been wonderful speaking with you.
Sure. Yeah, my pleasure.
Jason Foster on the changes the Temporary Foreign Workers Program has brought to Canada's labor market. The debate around this program has too often ignored the voices of those most affected, the migrant temporary workers themselves. Or worse, it has evolved into a simplistic blame game where workers are simply used as props. My next guest, Adriana Paz Ramirez, is well placed to offer perspective that places migrant workers rightfully at the center of the debate. She is a longtime organizer on migrant worker issues who works with Justicia for Migrant Workers here in British Columbia. Here is our conversation. So hi, Adriana. We've heard a lot about the Temporary Foreign Workers Program the last few weeks, but much of the coverage has not really engaged with migrant workers themselves. You're someone who's worked with migrant workers for a long time, and you know what are some of the biggest issues they face. So maybe you could talk a bit about that, both in terms of working conditions, but also in terms of living conditions, basic things like housing and so on.
Yeah. Well, thank you for covering this issue. I think it's very timely. So, as you said, right now there is a debate on the media about migrant workers, but it's not really talking about the main needs and controversies that migrant workers face every day. In terms of working conditions, I think we should first of all start talking about how this migrant worker population is really an unfree labor, because we are talking about people that is coming with a closed work permit that is only allowed to work for one single employer in one single sector. So this basically makes workers unfree in the sense that workers are not free to go and sell their labor in the labor market. None of the other workers in Canada, none of us, it's an unfree labor. It works in these conditions. So starting from the closed work permit, it's really taken away any ability that workers could have to defend or protect their rights. So this is at the core, right, of the essence of the temporary workers program, that opens the door to all sorts of vulnerabilities in the working conditions. Then when we talk about labor protections, we really have to think that there is a dual strategy here, that workers come as on a temporary basis. So in their immigration status, it gives ground for exclusions under the labor protections in the provincial labor legislation. So, for example, if we talk about farm workers in different provinces, farm workers are excluded from some of the schemes of the Employment Standards Act. And workers are excluded, for example, they are not allowed to get overtime or to be able to access to unemployment insurance. In some provinces, like in Ontario and Alberta, workers don't have health and safety protection. And so these are like real issues that makes workers very vulnerable in a very systemic way.
Yeah. Can I actually ask you, maybe while we're on this, these are, as you mentioned, these are some of the most precarious and sort of, and I think you're right to use the word unfree workers that there are. Maybe I could also ask you a bit about what it's been like to work on campaigns. I know, you've worked on campaigns for agricultural migrant workers. How hard has it been to improve these conditions given what they are and to really advocate for these workers to advocate on behalf of themselves?
Yeah, it is very, very challenging, and it's very difficult because workers really can be penalized for things that are unthinkable for any other kind of workers. For example, even getting to know workers, making contact and connection with the workers is a risk in itself for the workers. So, for example, when we try to hold meetings and to have like public education sessions for the workers to give them education about labor rights, workers are always afraid to interact outside of their farms because they are really under the vigilant eye of the employer or the supervisor. So first of all, like even making connection with these workers is risky for them. To give you just an example, like a recent example, in Ontario, our group, Justicia for Migrant Workers, we have challenged the labor legislation, the provincial labor legislation that says that migrant workers that are sick or injured are no longer able to receive health care after their work permits expire. So this has been challenged in the provincial court, and the provincial court has said that there is really nothing that it can do because workers are temporary workers. So according to the province, is that they don't have any obligation because they are just temporary workers. So when we talk about labor struggles, we have to always think that the immigration issue is always has to be taken into account, because when you argue that these workers don't have protection, some of the common arguments of the government, either federal or provincial government, is that these workers are excluded because they don't have permanent residency.
Yes, and I think it's important that you mention the immigration piece, because we often talk about, you know, and even now we've been talking so far about migrant workers and been really focusing on, you know, on the worker part. But there's equally important migrant piece there too. So I was hoping you could maybe say a bit more about how migrant labor fits into immigration policy, how immigration policy could also be a tool for addressing the needs of migrant workers.
Yeah, that is a very good question, because I think at the core of any debate or at the core of any solution, it is the piece of the immigration system. We basically have a broken immigration system, right, that brings these workers under these conditions where workers are basically disposable and displaceable. So if we do not advocate for paths to permanent residency for all workers in all the three streams of the temporary workers program, we will never be able to gain labor protections for these workers. Just to give you an example, for UFCW, they have tried to unionize farms in British Columbia, and they were successful. That was a great victory in two farms, but the following year, basically the employer didn't bring or didn't call back all the workers that were unionized. So this tells you that the immigration system basically has the power to give the power to employers to call back the workers. Not even the unionization was efficient to protect effectively these workers, because the employer basically said these workers are not coming back for next year because of the immigration system, since workers have to return to Mexico after the end of the contract, and then the employers have the power to call them back. So at the core of the debate, it is immigration system. And for example, talking about all the media controversy that is going on right now, I think labor movement or any kind of migrant rights advocacy group should be at the core of the demand, start demanding paths to permanent residency to workers instead of looking to other issues that says that workers are, for example, migrant workers are one of the reasons why wages are going down. The core of the debate is the broken immigration system. Instead of calling for a scrapping temporary workers programs, we should be calling for a reform on the immigration system that allows these workers to come to work and then to be able to settle and bring their families.
Excellent. So we have just about 1 or 2 minutes. And I think you raise, you know, a very interesting point. Maybe you could just expand on that a bit. And particularly in the context, right, we have a situation now where the Temporary Foreign Workers Program is all over the press. And it is, you know, it is an opportunity, one that doesn't come around that often. So what does the current focus, what kind of opportunities does it present for organizing around migrant worker issues? And then what are some of these dangers? What are some of the dangers? You know, I'm thinking of some of the nationalist rhetoric that has been, you know, narrowly focused on jobs for Canadians rather than solidarity with migrant workers.
Exactly. I think it is right now the focus is in Canadian jobs for Canadian first. I think this is the same mentality that there was like 100 years ago, right? If we are still wrapped with a nationalist flag or a nationalist discourse, we won't be able to really be able to to develop effective international worker solidarity. I can see on the media that, for example, with the recent debate about McDonald's, the BC labor movement is calling for a boycott to McDonald's and to go and support other businesses that are hiring Canadians. The message here is that instead of focusing on the broken immigration system, on the really very fragile labor laws, it's focusing on this kind of divide and conquer type of discourse between migrant workers and local workers. And I think the focus really should be, let's fix the broken immigration system, let's advocate better working conditions for all workers, regardless of the status, regardless if they have permanent residency, regardless if they have undocumented status, and obviously for immigrant workers too. I think that's one of the main dangers, that we are diverting the focus, and the danger is that we could be dividing the working class. Because, for example, if you have a new immigrant that is working in McDonald's, and if the debate is framed that a migrant worker that has a temporary work permit will come and take your job, it's not going to generate any kind of solidarity, right? And meanwhile, if we are asking the businesses to not hire migrant workers, how this is a progressive move for migrant workers? This is not a gain. This is not a victory for migrant workers. So I think this is a very important moment where we could be developing strong alliances between migrant workers groups, migrant workers themselves, with the labor movement. Those are one of the, I think, amazing opportunities.
I'm going to have to stop
it there.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Adriana, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael, for covering these issues.
That was Adriana Paz Ramirez of Justicia for Migrant Workers. That's everything for this week. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then.